That is it. I would move the, I guess they're dash one amendments.
That's correct.
I think we are, isn't it? That will exclude reference to terminal illness and will have severe medical condition be the standard for both pre- and post-guideline sentences. So I'll move those amendments.
Okay. Senator Shoemaker has moved amendments dash one. Are there objections to Senator Shoemaker's amendments?
So, Madam Chair, just for discussion, so we're, then we'll stick to deleting the including terminal illness.
Right.
Okay. Objections to Senator Shoemaker's amendments? Hearing none.
I think I would, Madam Chair, I would like to keep that, the language including terminal illness, and I just think from a practical matter, and maybe Senator Bunn doesn't.
Then I think your comment is, I think that what we ought to do is including terminal illness. What's wrong with Senator Shoemaker just saying severe medical condition, including terminal illness, both in the top and in the bottom?
Right. Two and one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that you actually have terminal illness in both places. So is that something that... Now, I hear people saying yes, and I know it's redundant. I know it's not technically correct, probably, Senator Shoemaker, but I guess it would be my recommendation that we go up to line 10 and we remove the brackets so that it will read a severe medical condition, including terminal illness. And then we come back down to line 21 and we will say... suffering from a severe medical condition, including terminal illness, and leave it in that standard set way. Are there any objections to us doing that?
No, as long as the legislative record is clear that by terminal illness we mean terminal and close to death, which is the definition that is being considered in Senate Bill 494. Involving right to die legislation.
Okay. I would say that if that legislation passes with a definition of terminal illness in it, whatever that means, then this certainly the statute would
I'm not sure because it's confined to that act.
Okay.
But certainly when I'm voting for this, and with the understanding that that is in fact how it's been applied, that's what I understand terminal condition to mean, and not simply a fatal illness.
That is to say, though, for the record, that they could release someone who had a severe medical condition, sure. Not including a fatal illness,
correct.
Fatal.
Yes. I find that quite appropriate.
Okay. Are there objections to the chair's further amendments of the Senate Bill 216, the hand and gross version dated 3-8-91? So ordered. Thank you very much. I think that will get us...
And
the balance of the dash one amendments as Senator Shoemaker moved.
And with that, and with those understandings, Madam Chair, I'll move the bill to the floor, the do pass recommendation.
Thank you. Senator Shoemaker
as amended.
Moved Senate Bill 216 as amended to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Call the roll, please.
Senator Brockman.
Aye.
Senator Hamby.
Aye.
Senator Shoemaker.
Aye.
Senator Springer.
Aye.
Vice Chair Hill.
Aye.
Chair Cohen.
Aye. Motion carried. Thank you. Okay. We're going to move to public hearing, I think, Ingrid, right? Do you want to say something about contempt or not? Senator Bunn has asked that we wait to do contempt till he comes back, and Ingrid has at least we're making headway on it, and there may be at least two kind of outstanding issues that we're going to come and ask the committee to resolve. I think we'll just not even talk about it right now, and we'll see how far we go. And move into public hearing on 638. That's the last bill. And if we get to visit about 376, we'll do it, but I want to make sure that the people who've come on Senate Bill 638 have a chance to talk about that bill. So we have John Bradley's here, and Charles Carl from the Police Bureau. 638.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm John Bradley from the Multnomah County District Attorney's Office, here to testify in support of Senate Bill 638. As I think almost all of you are aware, this bill, for the most part, passed both houses last session, and I believe that it died in a conference committee. And I don't remember the reasons why it died in the conference committee, but it did. What the bill does as it's currently drawn up is it indicates that a person who discharges a firearm from a vehicle within a city that has a population in excess of 15,000 commits a Class C felony. Now, the reason why we have that 15,000 in there, this came up in the House last session, and I believe, I could be incorrect, but there was a legislator who wanted, for some reason, didn't want this to apply to small cities. So I know Marion County at the time was having problems with drive-by shootings, and Multnomah County was having problems with drive-by shootings. So we said, well, what about 15,000? That's how we came up. We're not wedded to that figure. But that's the reason why it came up. It was a compromise in the House last session, I believe. There's also the provision that the section does not apply to the discharge of firearms by the police officers, by persons lawfully defending life or property, or persons engaged in lawful hunting. The reason, again, those were there is I believe that there was a concern that they wanted to exempt certain people who might be lawfully using a firearm from a vehicle. I don't think that'll occur very often. But in line 14, by persons defending life or property is defined in ORS 161-219. What that is that's the section that talks about when a person other than a police officer is justified in using deadly physical force. And there are two situations. One, I will try to, where a person is defending themselves against unlawful, where the person who is being shot at, or in this case, is committing or attempting to commit a felony involving the use or threatened immediate use of physical force upon a person. Example oftentimes is somebody comes up to you on the street and they pull out a gun and say, this is a robbery. That in this state, our law authorizes you, if you have a gun, to take it out, and you're justified in shooting the person. And that's the current law. The second limitation, or where you can use deadly physical force, is a person who commits or attempts to commit a burglary in a dwelling. And that has been to some degree modified by our Oregon Supreme Court. So in line 14 is where it says by people lawfully defending life or property, I don't know that it needs to have the word or property. I don't know that that sends out the right message to people in Oregon, that somehow they'll think that, well, for some reason we can defend our property, like somebody stealing my car, and maybe I can shoot at him. Because if somebody looks at this bill, they probably won't go and look at 161.219. They'll have no idea that as far as being allowed to shoot out of your car, the only thing I could imagine is this would say that if somebody was driving down the street and saw somebody burglarizing their house, they could shoot at them from their car. And I don't know that there's any reason to do that. So for that reason, I would just suggest to this committee that perhaps the language or property be deleted from this particular bill. Chuck Carl is here from the Portland Police Bureau, and we'll talk about the reason for the bill. Legally, the reason for the bill is that there is a loophole in the law that's, generally speaking, when somebody drives down the street firing from their car, in many instances, the most the state can proceed on is in the state of Oregon, excuse me, in the city of Portland, is discharging a firearm in the city, which I believe is a six-month misdemeanor offense. This is a very serious activity. It's oftentimes, or most times, related to gang activity. People oftentimes are shot at, and sometimes they are actually shot and they die. And what we're trying to do is to discourage this type of activity. Are there any questions of myself?
Thanks.
Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Chuck Carl. I'm Deputy Chief of the Portland Police Bureau Investigations Branch and in charge of the Tactical Operations Division, which includes our gang enforcement team. Basically, with the advent of the gang phenomenon in Oregon, which really began or in a large way, or at least to be tracked in a large way about 4 years ago, Police Bureau and the gang enforcement team, in conjunction with the state police and other local agencies, have been tracking gang types of activities better and better all the time. With respect to gang-related activities in the metropolitan area of Portland or in the city limits, I have documented for 1990, 2,791 types of gang activities, which range from 6 homicides to 464 serious assaults through 92 drive-by shootings, which is approximately 2 per week, weapons charges of 85 for the year of 1990. So far, through February 23rd of 1991, we have 11 drive-by shootings, 19 weapons charges, and these are documented cases. Many of the cases that occur are after dark, and many of them are not documented. In other words, a call comes out to police radio that there are shots in the area, and we get confirmed that basically shots in the area, cars go by, but there's no complaint, there's no description, and so forth. So there are a lot of weapons being seized, there are a lot of shots being fired in the metropolitan area. So on behalf of the Police Bureau, we want to support enhancing the penalty for discharging a firearm in that situation to a Class C felony. It'll be another tool that the officers have. I would also like to inform the committee of an increase in the discharge of firearms from the street by foot, by bicycle, and so forth. So not only does it involve vehicles, but it is occurring where they will get out of the vehicle and run down the street and fire weapons. So I would suggest, or I could suggest that on line 9, where it says discharges a firearm from a vehicle, that a statement could be included, discharges a firearm from a vehicle or on a public right-of-way within a city. And that would include the situation that we see increasing in Portland area where bicycles are being used. I don't know if we've had any skateboards yet, but there are a lot of weapons, and they're being recklessly discharged by these primarily gang members.
Senator Hamby.
May I ask either of the witnesses if, regarding the size of the city in line 10, your preference, because certainly, as the latter witness, some of our smaller cities within the metro area, in fact, do drop below the 15,000 population level. Your thoughts?
My personal opinion is I would hate to see this in any metropolitan area going on, regardless of the size. What goes up has to come down. And as long as it's recklessly being discharged, I think it's a threat to someone. The gang phenomenon has recently been involved in a shooting in Hood River. It's going up and down I-5 and throughout the state. So I'm primarily concerned with the Portland metropolitan area, but I don't see the need for a 15,000-person limit.
Madam Chair, pursuing that same point, why limit it to a city? And you have lots of parts of what are virtually Portland but are not technically within the city. Is it okay there to pop a gun?
Or from a snowmobile?
Shouldn't be.
Not in my opinion.
Madam Chair, Senator Shoemaker, the reason why, again, this came up 2 years ago, as I indicated, and it originally as filed, it just said in a city as defined by ORS 221.010. At the time this came up, the reason why we limited it to cities was because at the time Portland was having a lot of these particular problems. It had started to spread to the rest of the state. Now, I believe there is a witness here who will suggest to this committee is that you take out city altogether. I know that I believe it was the Sheriff's Association or the Chiefs of Police who were going to oppose the idea that you would limit it just to 15,000. I have no opposition at all by just saying that anybody who drives a firearm, you know, a car anywhere in the state and discharges a firearm from it should be guilty of a Class C felony. I don't have a problem with that.
Well, there are certainly people do still road hunt for deer and other animals, and I don't know that we'd want to reach that conduct with this.
But they are exempted on line 15, where it says persons engaged in lawful hunting.
Yes, well, there are people who were, interestingly enough, 2 years ago, I think the climate may have changed.
I think it may have.
Who were concerned about, they wanted the ability to fire off a gun.
Yes, I remember that.
And
for whatever reason.
Yes, just for the sake of it all. Aiming at no one for no particular purpose. But anyway, I think we'll see how the committee wants to go about this. And Senator Bachman, you represent the, what I call,
the Wild West. Is that what you're trying to say?
I can't say Eastern Oregon, but whatever. We'll discuss that issue when the time comes. I think it's useful for comment. Anything else?
Any other questions?
Thank you very much. Richard Stein for the Oregon State Police. We have John and Lloyd together again, right? Still together.
Unholy alliance.
Excuse me.
Madam Chair, Colin, members of the committee, I'm Detective Richard Stein, liaison for the Oregon State Police Youth Gang Strike Force, and I'm appearing before you today in support of Senate Bill 638. The Department of State Police supports the enactment of Senate Bill 638 with some recommendations for changes in the bill. The so-called drive-by shooting is a relatively new phenomenon in Oregon. It came with the advent of the California-style street gang and is peculiar to gang activity. After interviewing numerous gang members and conducting several investigations on gang activity, I would like to share with you some observations on the nature of the drive-by shooting. First, shooters may or may not have a specific intended victim. The nature of rival gang activity is such that any member of a rival gang is a potential target. Often the drive-by is done to scare the rival gang or to seek revenge for a perceived wrong. Second, the shooters are in no way trained or proficient in the use of firearms and fire blindly and wildly into a generally targeted area. As a result, bullets strike parked cars, houses, businesses, innocent pedestrians, and occupants of buildings. Third, the attitude of the drive-by shooter toward innocent passers-by who are wounded or killed is one of total indifference. The actors involved in drive-by shootings have no regard for the jurisdictional boundaries in which they operate. A rival gang or gang house located in a populated, unincorporated neighborhood, which is more and more often the case these days, is just as much a target as one inside larger cities. Fifth, drive-by shootings are not limited to acts performed from motor vehicles, but are also executed from bicycles, mopeds, vehicle are used to get to the scene and then exited, and the perpetrators act out on foot. From a prosecution standpoint, the existing statutes, ORS 166-220 and 166-630, provide a little recourse in the drive-by shooting scenario. ORS 166-220 provides felony prosecution for carrying a weapon with the intent to use it against another person. The actors in a drive-by, however, may intend to target a house or a vehicle. Second, ORS 166-630 addresses itself primarily to the conduct of hunters and target shooters, but does not adequately protect our citizens from the random violence perpetrated under these peculiar circumstances. If our wildlife is protected by misdemeanor statutes, certainly our citizens are deserving of protection from such wanton and reckless behavior. In conclusion, we would propose that to limit this bill to be a felony to crime only within larger cities would be a mistake. This type of activity is spreading rapidly outside the major metropolitan areas, and all of Oregon's citizens are deserving of the same protection provided under Oregon law, irrespective of the size or type of government in which they reside, work, or recreate. The bill should be expanded to include firing at occupied vehicles, residences, or commercial buildings where people may be present. The incidents of drive-by shootings have increased to over 200 in the past 2 years. During that time, 11 people have been murdered and untold numbers wounded. Since drive-by shootings are not yet designated as a separate crime, statistics on injuries sustained by innocents is not retrievable. Drive-by fatalities have occurred when the suspects were in vehicles, on bicycles, and on foot. In incidents where drive-bys occur in unincorporated areas, such as Alloa in Washington County and in unincorporated Multnomah County, as well as small cities like Gallatin and Newburgh where these incidents have occurred, are becoming more frequent. Madam Chair and members of the committee, this concludes my testimony, and I'll be glad to answer any questions that you might have.
Okay. Other questions?
No, I appreciate his comment on Alloa.
Okay, thank you very much.
Madam Chair, I need to leave promptly if there are any opponents.
Well, we're going to get, I don't know, there's no opponent, there are no opponents signed up, but I'm going to call Lloyd Atherton and John Nichols up, who are the last people to sign up. Lloyd?
For the record, Lloyd Athern here testifying on behalf of Representative Vera Katz. Excuse me. She would like to lend her support to Senate Bill 638. Some of the previous individuals here have talked about the need to expand it beyond cities or the size of the cities, as well as those instances where people might be physically outside of a car and shooting. I don't think she has any objections to either of those. Some of the crucial points are, first of all, in many of these instances, we're talking with random violence where it's either directed at people who are not known or it's directed at buildings that may or may not be occupied. There have been 11 fatalities. In talking to some law enforcement, they say that particularly in the Portland area, that number would be much higher were it not for the trauma unit at Emmanuel Hospital, where oftentimes within a matter of minutes, people can be scooped up and dumped off there. So the number could potentially be much higher. One of the things I wanted to point out is that the bill, as it's currently worded, would be a Class C felony. I think that's important when we look at the long-term implications, because that would then, based on changes made last year in House Bill 3470, allow us to prohibit these individuals upon conviction from either purchasing or possessing firearms essentially for the rest of their life unless they get records expunged or get relief from the court. So if they're being prosecuted now under a city ordinance, that would only be a misdemeanor. They would still be able to walk out, you know, immediately after they're let off and buy a gun, possess a gun lawfully. So those are essentially our concerns, and hope that you would act favorably upon the bill.
Thank you. John.
Madam Chair, my name is John Nichols. I'm the legislative chairman of the Oregon State Shooting Association.
I am not one of those that think you should be able to indiscriminately go around using your neighbor's house, car, or neighbor as a backstop. We came in today with the object of amending the bill to take and make it apply statewide, and then have a laundry list of exemptions such as police, military, self-defense, hunting, discharge on ranges, in rural areas, discharge with by landowners and their guests where such discharge would not endanger adjacent life and property, that type of thing. Out in the hall about an hour ago, there was another amendment kind of clobbered together, which says something to the effect that would be a new section 3C and or subsection C and 1, something to the effect that there discharges any dangerous or deadly weapon at any person, building, or other structure or animal without having license or authority for such discharge. We think that would pretty well cover shooting at your neighbor's cats and dogs or livestock or whatever.
But I'd ask you to work with John Bradley, who's here.
I believe Mr. Bradley saw a copy of this, and I believe he wanted it as a section C.
Well, we don't need to do it now, but just kind of work with with John and Ingrid and get some language arranged so we can pass it around to the committee members. I guess I would still, I want to get a double check on, I think I hear something from the people on the right over here that if we can get to something that gets it statewide and that is reasonable, that you want to go that direction, I want to ask Senator Brockman to look at it and make sure in the interest of more rural areas that your concerns are sort of kept in touch with, so we'll keep in touch.
No, I think the 15,000 is kind of silly. Yeah. I know, for example, Senator Timms doesn't have a 15,000-person town in his entire district, and he represents two-thirds of the state.
That's right. So we will we'll like to get your further language and get it set for work session.
Madam Chair, just one quick observation on the language as I read it, John. It said fire at any person, property, animal. That might not accommodate indiscriminate random shooting. I want to be sure that it includes that, too.
Madam Chair, Senator Schumacher, we just clobbered this together out in the hall, and it's very, very rough.
Great. Anything else? Anyone else who would like to speak to this bill? Thank you very much.
Be excused.
You may be excused.
I have to carry his message.
Oh, we have one more.
The other committee.
Good, thank you. We have one more item before you run away.
Oh, yippee.
LC... You've been waiting patiently. LC 3954, it is at the request of the, well, actually it's a request of the Judiciary Committee for the Bankers Association, enacts Article 4A of the Uniform Commercial Code relating to funds transfers. Are there objections to us for running it on for printing? Hearing none, so ordered. Thank you. We'll take up contempt.
Another day.
Monday night. No. Well, Ingrid will work on that. Thank you. We're adjourned.